positive, cocking bit of a goddamn bill.
Godless heathen.
Regulators! Hey, dog, did you see the size of that chicken?
This is Infants on Thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Listener essay.
One flesh, one bone, one true realism. One voice, one hope, one real decision. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Welcome back to another episode of Infants on Thrones. My name is Tom Perry, and today we're joined with the author of WeirdMormonShit.com and web designer Craig.
You know, this is God punishing me. Like, there's no way I'm going to have a vision.
And I'm also joined with Randy.
Yeah, well, try to imagine your dead mom watching you masturbate. Yeah. Like,
where we discuss Craig's listener-submitted essay titled The Strength of a Witness.
So what am I doing? What should I do?
It's just a quick, which one do you like, this or this?
Yeah, you can't hesitate. Well, you can hesitate, but that's discouraged.
But remember his age. He's like, I don't know.
Well, there's like one or two things.
Nirvana or Pearl Jam? Come on.
Oh, like a preference checklist kind of thing?
Right,
oh,
right, okay. Right. A flash quiz. Right,
gotcha.
You really think Nirvana and Pearl Jam is dated? That is, what the hell?
I say Nirvana.
I mean, you're not supposed to answer the questions, Randy. Hang on.
Couldn't resist.
All right. Mac or PC?
A Mac.
Cat or dog?
Dog.
AC/DC or Metallica?
If I had to, AC/DC.
Oof. Kate Kelly or John DeLynn?
John DeLynn.
A bidet or toilet paper?
Oh, bidet.
All day, every day.
You know what? Yeah, the first time I had a bidet, used a bidet, was on my mission in Spain, and I thought it was wonderful.
Here's a good analogy. If you fall in the yard and you know, face first, and your hand lands in fresh dog shit, Do you take a dry paper towel to clean your hand off?
Dude, Randy, I can't tell you how many times, because like all the other missionaries were like freaked out by it, and I used to say that same analogy. I was like, dude, you guys, if you did that, like, would you just take a paper towel? No,
a dry
you fucking
paper
wash
towel.
Your hands.
Right.
Yeah, a dry paper towel, and then just yeah. So yeah, bidet all day.
Okay. iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
And then Nirvana or Pearl Jam?
I would go with Nirvana, because they did a David Bowie cover.
Oh, like that. They changed they got rid of lipstick rock.
Okay, last throw in, since I'm a 90s grunge guy, Alice in Chains or Soundgarden?
I would go with Alice in Chains.
Absolutely. Nice. Right. Nice answer.
But Soundgarden's a close second. You're making it sound like the gap's too big.
Alice in Chains is way more interesting.
Yeah,
that's
I would agree.
I'll put it.
I would agree.
Dumb and Dumber or Big Lebowski?
Big Lebowski.
God damn. No, I'd say I can't choose between those two. That's like choosing between my children.
Yeah, it's just like that.
Which
one do I love more?
There's a soft spot in my heart for Dumb and Dumber, but it is dumb.
Been burned and with both feet on the ground. I've learned that it's painful coming down. No use running away.
I went to the temple, as good Mormons do, to faithfully attend an endowment session. It was the middle of the day on a Wednesday or something, so there weren't very many people there. I was invited by the officiator to be part of the witness couple. I felt honored, but was hesitant since I had never done it before. And I was also nervous for the same reason I always felt nervous when I went to the temple or when giving a priesthood blessing. Like probably many of you, I had spent my young adult life always feeling unworthy, even when I technically was by the church's standard. I took worthiness and being honest about my sins very seriously, and I always felt like I was a failure because, like every young person, sexuality was something I found emotionally and biologically rewarding. But since sex was so taboo, I never let any experiences I had with girls get very far, and I naturally kept it to myself, if you know what I mean. But that day in the temple, I put on a confident face and I agreed to be a part of the witness couple. I knelt down at the altar next to an elderly lady, the two of us representing Adam and Eve before Almighty God himself. As the lights dimmed and the ceremony continued, I suddenly felt myself waking up, laying on the ground, looking up at the temple ceiling. I was thinking, how did I get here? What's going on? Well, my anxiety had reached the level of making me pass out. At the time, I didn't realize that's what had happened, that's what caused it. When I was a kid, I would sometimes pass out if I laughed or if I cried too hard. Our family doctor attributed it to an underdeveloped diaphragm or something. But that had stopped when I was about 10 years old or so. For insurance reasons, I'm presuming, the church requires any kind of medical occurrence like this to be documented. And they strongly encouraged me to not drive home after filling out some paperwork. So I called my dad and he came and picked me up, and I was left feeling embarrassed because I thought passing out was something that I had grown out of. Again, I never even considered anxiety as the cause. I probably didn't even know what that was at the time. My dad was in the bishopric, and he mentioned this incident to our bishop, probably wondering if everything was okay with me spiritually. And the bishop asked him if I had seen a vision while being unconscious in the temple. I told my dad no, I hadn't seen a vision. I wish I had. I mean, who wouldn't want that to happen? If that was ever going to happen to me, that would be the place, right? I had grown up hearing temple stories about people seeing angels, Jesus, deceased loved ones. I mean, how amazing would that be to experience and know that visions and witnesses like this were real? And to feel special when you could tell that story to those who needed timely confirmation that the church was true. So, no vision for me that day. I clearly never thought I was worthy enough to experience something like that. I was surprised the bishop would ask my dad that. I mean, why would he think I'd be worthy of something as huge as a vision? But it came as some sort of comfort that he did ask that question, because it meant that it might be possible, if only I could be worthy enough, perhaps. So now, years later, after having left the church, I remember reading and being taught that a witness from the Holy Ghost is even more powerful than a physical eyewitness account. This teaching is used to suggest that knowing by seeing or by having evidence is not as convincing as the feeling the Holy Ghost gives you, because rather than a physical experience, the Holy Ghost communicates spirit to spirit. Really? Can people honestly say they've had a spiritual witness or a burning in the bosom that is stronger and more sure than if they were to be shown with their own eyes a grand, detailed, immersive vision of the celestial kingdom, like the kind Joseph Smith allegedly had and recorded in the Doctrine and Covenants? Think about what that experience would be like, what burning questions it would answer, what doubts it would instantly extinguish, and how much awe you would be left with. Well, let's take it one notch further. Think about if you were to have a vision like this, and to ensure you didn't question it or think it was all just a dream or something weird firing in your brain, Elohim himself gives you a heavenly instrument of curious workmanship to take back with you, something that could not be replicated or built by humankind. Sounds familiar, right? The Book of Mormon has a story where the prophet Lehi was given exactly this type of device to use as a compass when traveling to the Promised Land from Jerusalem. It was called the Liahona. So, in this vision, God gives you a Liahona type of artifact to serve as a reminder and a testament about what you saw was real. And you could even use it to show others if they were so deemed worthy. Whenever you would have any doubts or hard questions, you could go to your Liahona and vividly remember that vision you experienced So the question then is feeling peaceful and calm, is having a burning in the bosom about something that you're asking for or praying for, is that on the same level with the experience of a vision and evidence that you have that you can hold in your hand? To say that it is, to say that it's better, is obviously peddling a mediocre religious experience. The caveat that, yes, it is possible to have these amazing kinds of experiences, but only when you're worthy of it, that's just another example of how the church manipulates people. It's another carrot they lead people with to continue building their kingdom, funded by unquestioning tithe payers. If church leaders were to be slightly honest enough to address this dilemma, I could imagine them rationalizing it, telling people, don't be worried if you sacrifice everything and there's no payoff, because look at how good you felt doing it. Well, I'm going to say, for me, I rarely felt good in the church. It made me very self-critical, and now that I've been out for several years, I'm just starting to feel like I can be myself, and it feels great. Now, if I ever pass out and start seeing angels, well, I'll just hope that never happens.
First of all, Craig, let's get to know you just a little bit. And maybe you can talk about, you know, what brought you to talking about this as your essay, this particular, these stories that you share, kind of the direction that you went with in your essay. Do you want to touch on a little bit about that, or should we just go into your backstory a little bit?
Yeah, maybe backstory. I mean,
raised in the church and all that?
Yeah. All that, like, typical raised in the church.
Where were you raised in the church?
I was raised in Gilbert, Arizona.
Oh, my God. Hey, were you neighbors with Steve Benson?
No. His son went to my high school, but I actually never knew him the whole time that I was there.
Okay. You talking the ex-Mormon Steve?
I'm talking
Benson?
About the grandson of President Ezra Taft Benson. When I was on my mission in Tempe, Arizona, 93 to 95, he wrote an article called Temple Square or Red Square, and that was like really pissed off all of us missionaries to have to deal with that. But we knew, like, all the missionaries in the Tempe, Arizona mission knew where his mansion was. I don't know if it was a mansion, but it was a pretty nice house.
Yeah, because he was a cartoonist at the the Tribune or something.
Oh, the Arizona Republic is where he
Arizona
wrote.
Republic, yeah.
Yeah. And there was always like this big dare to go on splits and try to knock on his door.
That would have been fun, actually, now looking back at that, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was privy to a lot of stuff that I now know about Ezra.
Oh, man.
Being a dick and being a racist.
Yeah.
And
isn't he the one that blew the whistle on there was a signature machine for President Benson at the time?
Yeah, my mission call was signed by a machine. It was clearly a machine. And the signature looked like it was written scribed by somebody who was in the later stages of dementia, but maybe they had him sign it once and then use the machine, cuz it clearly looked like a debilitated signature done by a machine.
Oh. He was short-circuiting as it was signed in Randy Snyder's.
Nice. Yeah. So,
version
1.0. So just for any listeners, Gilbert, Arizona is like the epicenter of Mormonism in Arizona, pretty much altogether.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, I mean, the high school that I went to was pretty much mostly Mormon. We had the whole seminary building right across the street from the high school, so we didn't have to do like the early time seminary and everything. There was a an hour out of the day that we were able to go over there.
That really is just like Utah, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. So I had a great childhood. I can't really complain about anything there. and you know, did the whole mission thing. I went to Spain on my mission. Really liked it a lot. You know, I loved it there. It's a cool place. There was a lot of cool people there. And you know, some of the coolest people that I ended up meeting there were, you know, fellow missionaries. That was something that was really surprising to me. So yeah, you know, I came home from the mission and I was doing everything I was supposed to do on, you know, on the Mormon track. And,
can you give us a feel for, your age? What years did you go on your mission?
Oh yeah, it was, 02 to 04.
Okay. So you're a youngster.
I'll take that. I'll take it. Let's see. So, yeah, you know, I was planning on going to BYU. I ended up going to the whole community college thing up there in Utah so I could, you know, take the Spanish test, which gave me like 8 A pluses. So padded my GPA. So I was able to get into BYU.
What were you, like a 4.25? What is that? What is that? A plus?
Well, that's a real thing in California because of
is it?
Yeah, to get an A in honors classes in California, you get a 5.0 instead of 4.0.
Bunch of rogues out there in Cali.
Yeah, my little brother graduated with a 4.13.
That's funny.
Yeah, so that got me into BYU. But you know, I never really figured out like what I was wanting to do. I was just kind of up there, like, you know, going with the flow, going along with what everybody else was doing, all of my friends and everything. And I kind of, you know, I was dating somebody up there, and things got pretty serious. And you know, one thing led to another, that whole thing. So I ended up, I actually was getting scared that I was going to get kicked out of BYU. And I...
Wait, you're growing a beard? What do you mean?
No, you know, things with the girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you don't need to get all personal, man. I mean, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, part of this is funny to me because it's... Like I still, you know, you still feel like the guilt and the shame talking about it, but it's really like ridiculous to even. But then there's the whole like oversharing thing on the other side, right? So,
right.
Okay. So was it light petting or heavy petting?
Oh, I got.
I'm just kidding. It doesn't.
It got heavy.
is that woman your wife now, or no, someone else?
No, it was somebody else.
Okay. Okay. And yeah, we can shit all over, right?
No. Sure, why not?
Just kidding.
Yeah. So, I came home. I was like, you know what? I don't want to deal with like a. I mean, I had gone through like disciplinary councils up there and disfellowshipment and all that stuff.
Did you really?
Oh yeah,
because of the messing around stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I'm the type of person that I feel like sometimes I would be just like overly honest, and but you know, it's because I took the church so seriously. You know, if I was in an interview and they're like, you know, is there anything that you need to have cleared up that you haven't cleared up yet? I was just like spilling my guts, you know. I was just like, oh man,
there's nothing left unconfessed.
Yeah. Like one time when I was 12, I did this, and they're just like, okay. So
even stuff that I had cleared up, I still felt like, just in case, yeah. Bishop, just in case.
Oh, you were like a repeat confessor.
Well, yeah, and there were a few sins that, you know, fell into the repeat category.
Oh, like masturbation, so, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Enough said.
Yeah. Let's see. So,
well, because you were just for our listeners that may not be familiar, if you engage in sexual, what the Mormon Church calls misconduct, mm-hmm. Before your mission, it's a much different situation than when it happens after your mission, because you're endowed, you're a returned missionary, and right. The penalties are much more severe.
Right, right. No pun intended. Yeah, they are. And so, you know, it becomes like a stake matter at that point, right? Instead of just a ward matter.
Wait. So did you meet in front of the Stake High Council when you were going through some of your stuff?
Eventually I did, yeah.
Hot diggity. Wow.
Yeah.
Tom's been on the other side of that.
I have, and I actually feel for you, man. That sucks.
It's a trip, yeah. It's really weird.
Was it well? I guess I should ask this, just to be fair. Was it a good experience for you at the time? I mean, if you were still a pretty heavy believer, because when I went through those experiences on the High Council side, most of the time, even the suspect, what would you call the person that's sitting there? The accused, the defendant?
The perpetrator,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Perpetrator. But usually when we did those meetings, everybody would be saying that it was such a spiritual experience for everyone involved. Like it was just transformative.
Would you
classify that the same way?
Yeah, I would imagine that's because it's such a high emotional, thing that's taking place. You know,
yeah, you're watching Christ's atonement in action. Right?
Yeah, not only that, like you're not dealing with the really uncomfortable apostasy thing that threatens your own worldview. Like
right.
the person that's on trial for sexual misconduct, who ostensibly is a believer, as you probably were at the time, Craig.
Yeah,
it really is a court of love. Like they really, I could see that. I could totally see that being a spiritual experience because nobody feels threatened. And when you feel threatened, you go on the attack, and nobody's on the attack because everyone in that room understands sexual urges, right?
Yeah. And it's isolated to just the individual. It's not, you know, it's not somebody out there that's like talking publicly about anything or, you know, criticizing. So yeah, it's gotta be a completely different scenario there.
Yeah. So you survived it.
I did, yeah. And so I was, I kept, submitting myself to these disciplinary councils. The last one did, you know, it ended in excommunication. And
you got excommunicated?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
It was about 7 years ago, actually. So I wanted to be like free of the guilt. I felt like, I kind of like knew that I was going to be excommunicated, and I approached it and answered their questions in a way that would kind of ensure, you know what I mean? Like, it would show them that, hey, like this is something that I'm not going to change. Cause at that point I was dating, the woman that I ended up marrying, and, we were living the way that we were living. I knew that was not going to change. And I wanted like the burden of the quote unquote priesthood removed so I could get my life together, you know, kind of have a reset. So, isn't it funny? Like, it's kind of odd. Like shouldn't having the priesthood itself be a power to overcome like that kind of thing? But anyway, I was kind of done beating myself up about it. And I just, I let that, take its course, and, cut to today, or about, a year and a half ago, that's when I started listening to, Mormon Stories, Mormon Expression. And it's funny, cause I actually found out about this whole, like, Mormon podcasting community because we were watching Bill Maher one day, and he mentioned, hey, there's a Mormon leader who is publicly criticizing the church and, saying that their history is full of shit. And I was just like, what the hell? What is happening here? I immediately Googled it.
So back up a little bit.
Yeah.
You're excommunicated. And then you find about Mormon Stories. Explain to me a little more about your mindset during that time. Were you a believer, but you just were like, ah, I can't
oh,
live.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. So I cut two, but there was like 6 or 7 years in between that time.
And you were totally inactive at that time.
I was totally inactive. Yeah. I was kind of like, you know what? I'm excommunicated. I'm not going to like go back to church. I kind of want to break from it. And my wife was, she's never been Mormon, you know, she's raised Catholic. And so I just kind of, you know, over time, I just got used to not going to church, not even really thinking about it. It was kind of one of those things though, that was always in the back of my mind. Cause I was still fully indoctrinated, you know, psychologically. So, I would still feel guilty about things and you know,
did you do other things like drink coffee or drink alcohol or smoke?
Yeah. All of the above. I mean, wow. I've always loved coffee. I've always liked, beer. So, in high school, I dabbled and had fun, but,
right.
Yeah, I totally like stopped all that to go, you know, do the mission thing and
but you
get
still
very serious and all that. But
you still felt kind of a latent belief in Joseph Smith as a prophet.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally, 100%.
So you were kind of had a Jack Mormon phase.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, even like so Jack Mormon to the point where it was all like subconscious, you know. I didn't really hang out with any of my friends who were Mormon or talk about it at all.
Well, what about family, extended family, you know, like your siblings and your parents?
Yeah, I would just avoid like conversations about it. If there was like a baby blessing or something, there was no way that I was going to go. I think I would have felt like too much guilt, you know, too much.
Cause you're a returned missionary. So getting exed is a big deal.
Yeah.
Returned missionary. So were they aware of the excommunication in your family?
Well, that's the funny thing. I mean, and I've heard this, in other people's stories that, you know, they'll like leave the church or, I mean, in my case it was excommunication, but it's never talked about with anyone, you know, like the only conversation I ever had with anyone who was Mormon, was with my parents, but didn't talk to my siblings about it.
Your parents were aware.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But there wasn't any like judgment or condemnation or shaming, right?
I mean, that, you know, on a surface level there was, but nothing, you know, nothing too bad, but I definitely was, I felt like, you know, removed kind of from the family because that was so much a part of their life, you know, and, it was just like, you know, every conversation had something to do with it. So there, you know, it gets to a point where it's like, I would either like want to say something that would be offensive or, you know, so I just would avoid it altogether.
Well, but to follow up a little bit what Randy asked earlier, so you get excommunicated, but you're still in the believing phase, right? But
yeah, absolutely.
And so was it like 5 or 7 years or something like that?
Yeah.
You eventually like intellectually disconnected from the church? In that, and when you found out about, you know, Mormon stories, Mormon expression and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It was the Hans Mattson. When I Googled his name and I found that John DeLynn had interviewed, Mattson, and, yeah, so that blew my mind. Cause then, you know, that opened up everything with, you know, Book of Abraham, polyandry, Kinderhook plates. You know, soon after that, I that's when I found the CES letter, and then I was just like,
"Wow, yeah!"
I was like, "Holy shit, this is like so heavy." I was trying to explain it to my wife. She was just like, "Why do you like care about any of this shit?"
Right?
Yeah, like you've been disconnected. So to play devil's advocate, I'm going to be a TBM here for a second. Okay.
Yes.
He's good at it. Believe me, he's good.
So it sounds like you couldn't hack living the Mormon lifestyle. And, yes. and finding out this stuff just kind of gave you an excuse to do what you're already doing.
You are 100% correct.
Whoa. Wow, I felt because...
Me too, man. Me too.
Jeez.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've probably listened to every, you know, episode out there on every Mormon podcast. And I would always hear, you know, like people are saying, yeah, you know, it's not because I wanted to sin. It's not because I was offended. I wasn't lazy. It was all like for intellectual reasons. And I totally get that. But I was always kind of like, well, you know, it doesn't have, you know, those aren't all mutually exclusive. Like it can kind of be a mix of, you know, any and all of those things. It just, you know, it turns out that for me, yes, I do like coffee. I like having a beer. And, so yeah, in that sense, I absolutely, you know, I wanted to do those things and I felt like, you know, feeling so guilty about all this stuff, feeling guilty that I didn't want to be, you know, like another thing is like, you know, individualism is something that's like impossible to kind of do within Mormonism.
You can do it, but you can't do it without being marginalized.
Right. Which who wants that? Right.
Right. I
mean, everybody wants to be validated by their community, by their tribe. So, yeah. So like I fully, you know, embrace the fact that I did want to be individualistic and I wanted to experience life, and I don't have any regrets about it.
I'm jealous of your ability to not feel the guilt, because yeah, I did the whole there was an experience when I was a teenager and one of my friends was drinking a beer and he's like, come on man, it's Bud Light or something. And I said, no, and I said, no. And he's like, come on, just a taste, just so you know what it's like. No, my virgin lips won't take it. And I that was like the, you know, this trophy that I held all through my adulthood, my childhood, that I never even tasted alcohol ever.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to make light of this, but not long after that, you tried to kill yourself.
No, that was before. Was it?
No, I don't know. I'm just guessing that your attempt at suicide was after resisting that temptation. Maybe it was after, or maybe it was flipped.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think. It was close. How about that? It was in the same vicinity.
At any rate, you should be envious of Craig, as I am, as someone
who is
also riddled with anxiety. the ability to let go of that anxiety is something that leads to happiness.
It's true.
Yeah, because I always felt like if I did anything wrong, it didn't really matter, because God, angels, you know, and the spirits that were walking around us watching me masturbate or whatever, we're constantly taking spirit notes.
Yeah, well, try to imagine your dead mom watching you masturbate. Yeah, like that was something I went through.
Yeah, that'll stop. That'll get you to stop.
Yeah, no, it didn't. But it made me feel like shit.
There's nothing that can stop that.
No, that's like a tsunami. It's coming. But my mom died when I was 21. I got married when I was 23, and I still masturbated when I got married. And I would have these like visions of my dead mother. You know, she's in the spirit world. She can check in on us whenever she wants. And what if she's checking in right at the moment I'm masturbating? Oh, it was horrible. Horrible.
that is horrible.
Well, yeah, and because you would hear like these stories of like, you know, people who had died, and then, you know, they got like this one like kind of like opportunity to come back and make some kind of like visit or connection, right? So yeah, to have that going through your mind, like what if, you know, during that one opportunity, if this is what was seen, like that would drive you nuts.
Yeah. And then there's...
I wonder what my son Randy's doing right now. Oh, my goodness.
He's self-abusing himself. He's treating his body like it's an amusement park.
I thought I raced him better than that.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also the mind fuck stories of the person who committed a sin seconds before they got killed. And God, there's so many mind fucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Over things that really aren't important on what kind of person you are and what kind of life you're living. And that's just part of being Mormon.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? In fact, speaking of mind fucks, the whole phrase and idea of after all we can do, that phrase.
Oh.
That's such a hamster wheel. That's so, like, it's just keep...
Where does that come from? I can't even remember.
Oh, that's in 2 Nephi. You're saved by grace after all you can do. It's like 2 Nephi 5 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember teaching lessons on this because it baffled me as a believer. And the one thing I consistently did in my Mormon life was teach. I taught Elders Quorum. I taught Young Men's. And I remember having this one lesson because I was teaching the lesson wanting answers from you know the people I was teaching. What does this mean? Ye are saved after all ye can do? Because I could always do more. In every instance of every day, I could always do more. So how do I draw the line to keep my sanity? And there was no answers. Nobody had any good answers.
Yeah, because it's like that logistics loophole, right? Where it's like you can never be perfect. It's be therefore perfect, right? Same sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's an unachievable goal.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
But they say shoot for the moon and you'll land on the top of the garbage pail, and yeah, that's where the celestial kingdom is, apparently, on the top of the garbage pail.
But you'll be depressed, like, oh, I didn't even get close.
If you shot for the moon and you land on the garbage pail, Christ will pull you up to the moon.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
He's always hanging out in the garbage can.
But the people that weren't like so self-introspective, so introspective, or riddled with anxiety, if they were the kind of people like narcissists, would be totally happy within the church, because you know they never feel guilt. But those who feel guilt and just look at every and just dissect every little minutia that they do in their life, that kind of mindset that they set up in the church is just doomed to make you feel miserable and self-loathing. And that's kind of part of your listener essay was like, oh, man, I want a vision, but am I worthy enough? Will I ever be worthy enough?
Yeah, there's no way you could be. Like, you're going to overanalyze every little thing that you do, and you're always going to make an excuse for yourself of, like, why, you know, something didn't happen the way you hoped it would, right? Or you know, I didn't get that blessing because, you know, I woke up 2 minutes late on my mission, you know? It's a never-ending mindfuck.
Yep. Yeah, it's like I shouldn't have listened to AC/DC because we both, you know, everybody knows that they're devil music or whatever.
Well, there is a condition called scrupulosity, which John DeLynn has researched extensively. Mm-hmm. And it's basically OCD with religion. And that's where I'm nowhere near that. But that's where it becomes extremely dangerous for people that are prone to that. Do you guys are familiar with scrupulosity?
Just what Dolan's talked about. I mean, I agree with you. I have like a very, very mild version. I think if as a believer, I probably, you know, had some of the symptoms, but nowhere near like where it'd be diagnosed, I guess.
Right. We're going to say,
yeah,
Craig?
I'm reading about it right now. That's pretty, it could have like my picture on the Wikipedia article. This totally is like that. It's this kind of like thinking and obsessively wanting to follow the rules and do everything right. I mean, that's kind of like what squeezed me out in a way out of the church.
Hmm. So going back to the visions thing, did you guys ever have anybody in your friends or families that did have visions, or at least claimed to have visions, that only compounded the problem? Because when I was listening to your essay, Craig, my mom has actually, you know, seen family members or whatever from past lives. And who's it? There's someone else in my family that had claimed to see guardian angels or something like that.
Were they playing rock, paper, scissors?
they didn't get into that detail. But see, that always messed with me even more. It only compounded that problem, because I thought, wow, well, people that I know that are close to me are having these things. And so, mm-hmm. like you, I would pray, or I would fast, or I'd go to the temple thinking, okay, what am I doing wrong? Like, I'm doing everything right. I even got all the words right, where that temple worker didn't even need to help me. Damn it. And then I still can't get anything. Like, not even like a blurred vision where, you know, I could only see the finger poking out of the cloud, like nothing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, to answer your question, I never heard or knew of anyone that claimed to have anything like that. Everything I always heard was like, you know, part of like church history. I can remember, you know, Lorenzo Snow being the last person that was, you know, he was the last prophet that ever publicly said, "Hey, I saw Jesus in the temple," you know, well, on Tuesday. And
not only that, he saw all of the founding fathers of the United States.
Oh, that was Wilford Woodruff, wasn't it?
Oh, is that Wilford Woodruff?
Okay. Yeah, I think so. Because he was the one, he got the vision from
the
founding fathers themselves. Yeah, to do their temple work, because they were waiting for it or something like that.
Well, Joseph F. Smith had a vision of the spirit world. So which of these is the last?
probably Joseph F. Smith, yeah.
Yeah, because he actually got canonized in DNC with his vision of the spirit world.
Oh, yeah, that sounds familiar.
But he didn't see Jesus.
No, nope.
Well, we don't know.
Oh, we know.
Too sacred to talk about.
He testified in front of Congress that I experience revelation just like anyone else. Good feelings and such.
That was vague enough. It could have covered it. But Craig, you mentioned in your essay, and I love this part, where you pass out from an anxiety attack. And I really want to get into this a little bit. One, you mentioned that you didn't know it was an anxiety attack when you passed out.
Right, right.
And then two, your bishop mentions to your dad asking if you had seen a vision or experienced something like that.
Yeah.
So was your bishop implying, oh man, my mind's going crazy here.
Tom, if you pass out in the temple, doesn't that seem kind of like a logical conclusion?
That is, yeah, and that's where I was kind of leading to, because my wife, I mentioned this in the email that I sent to Randy, when my wife and I, we were doing an endowment session, and then we decided we were going to, because we had some extra time, we were going to do some ceilings afterwards. So we're doing ceilings, and then my wife starts getting that, you know, that weird look in her eye, and I'm like, oh, she must be feeling something, and then she freaking just falls over.
She was feeling something. Lack of oxygen to her brain or something. lack of glucose to her brain.
Yeah, so she freaking takes a header and then hits her head on the corner of the altar there. And, you know, and I'm running over and catching her or whatever. But, you know, it's like this weird little chaos moment. But the patriarch or the sealer, I don't know what they call him, but
he's the,
he kind of
officiator.
Whatever, dude. Thanks for correcting me on that. But he stops it and he's like, "You gonna be okay?" And I actually, it seemed like I was the only one in my mind, like, well, maybe she was just overcome with the spirit. Mm-hmm. And when we were leaving, I was asking her, like, "What happened? Did you see something? Was there an angelic presence there? Were the families that we were sealing, you know, did they embrace you in the love of the Holy Ghost, or what happened?" She's like, "I haven't eaten for over 5 hours." It's like, oh yeah, that's right, we haven't.
Wow. Well, and you didn't have to fill out paperwork like Craig
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask Craig, because, yeah, we didn't have to fill out, like, release form. When you mentioned that in your essay, I'm like, oh, my gosh, wow, okay.
Yeah, that kind of, because, you know, I was just planning on continuing on with the session. I mean, I knew that the session was going to continue going without me because, you know, they have to, that everything's scripted and timed, right? But I was planning on just going back in and doing something else. But yeah, they took me to, some little side room, and they were like, yeah, you know, lay down and just kind of, here's some water, some orange juice, and, fill out this, it needs to be like documented.
Though this probably happened a few years after your wife, Tom. And so maybe, the legal department had a few incidents.
That's what I'm presuming they had something happen and they were like, we just need to mitigate, you know, any insurance risks. Or
that's why the White Bible had so many rules, is because so many incidents happen, you know, worldwide with missionaries.
Yeah.
Well, it also bums me out, because I could have been part of a lawsuit, right? I mean, she didn't suffer any damage or anything, like a little scratch on her head.
Yeah,
or whatever,
the statute of limitations has run out. Sorry.
Son of a bitch.
But I think that's kind of a natural thing with the Mormon worldview. If you pass out in the temple, I mean, you have like your bishop or your dad would have images of Lamoni, you know, passing out because he was so struck by the spirit. His wife passes out, and then all the servants pass out.
When you guys are talking about there's kind of like a precedence in the Book of Mormon for these kind of things happening. Like, I didn't even. That never even crossed my mind, and I was fully, you know, familiar with the Book of Mormon stories and everything, obviously. But I was just so racked with guilt. I thought, like, this is all my fault. I'm here in the temple when I shouldn't be, and this is God punishing me. Like, there's no way I'm gonna have a vision or I'm gonna, you know, have any kinds of, yeah.
You didn't mention in the essay that you felt unworthy.
Oh, I think I did. Yeah, I
did. You really? Because I don't
know.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, when he was talking about the vision.
Well, you were wondering about if you were worthy enough to get a vision, but you didn't say that you were definitely not worthy by Mormon standards.
Oh yeah, maybe I didn't call that out specifically, but yeah, I mean, to make it clear, that was the reason. Like, I can remember, I didn't put this in the essay, but there was even a time where I was over at like my friend's house, and I was probably, you know, I was like a priest, priest age, 16, 17. And somebody like from their ward wanted like a blessing. And so my friend's dad was like, hey, you know, you two, let's go. You guys have the priesthood. Let's go give this, you know, lady a blessing. And,
like,
you know,
how many days has it been since I masturbated?
Yeah, I'm like, oh shit, I can't. Well, you know, I gotta just do it.
I took the sacrament before the last time, or after the last time.
Like, yeah, you it's funny. You actually start like thinking about stupid shit like that. But I just like, I went ahead and like did it, and yep, I passed out in that one too.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So was this around the time that you figured out what was causing it, that it was anxiety and whatever? No, or no?
Well, no. I mean, anxiety was a term that I wasn't even familiar with. It, you know, as far as I knew, I was just immoral, unworthy person. That was the beginning and end of it.
So when did you on the timeline? When did you figure out? Like, oh, like you go to the doctor and he's like, oh, you've got anxiety and here's, you know, ways to cope or a medication. I don't know what he gave you, but.
I never went to, I actually never went to a therapist, about that specifically, but, I mean, I realized that when I realized kind of everything else, you know, about the church.
So have you passed out since you've, had your. I don't know. It's kind of a faith crisis. You're already gone.
But, yeah.
Your intellectual faith crisis. Have you passed out since then?
No, I actually haven't. I feel like I've come close a couple times. But luckily, no, I haven't at all.
Well, yeah. So now you have nothing in your life as anxiety inducing as having to give a blessing right after you masturbated that afternoon, yeah. Or going to the temple when you've heavy petted or worse. Yeah, I say worse in air quotes, please.
please.
With your significant other at the time. But there's something I want to get to. I really want to get to, because it took me the second time listening to it to catch it. But you talked about the Mormon notion that visions are not as powerful as the witness of the spirit. Yes. You know, it's speaking spirit to spirit is so much more powerful. And so what that reminded me of is you got these two, you know, they're totally fleshed out, three-dimensional characters, Laman and Lemuel. I don't know if you saw them on the big screen when they were splashed up there on
Brilliant.
Book of Mormon Volume 1.
I still haven't seen that movie.
Oh, so. Man, you got to see it, dude. But I remember, you know, Mormons have to deal with that. Laman and Lemuel saw an angel. They saw an angel with their own eyes that rebuked them. Nephi extended his hand and shocked them to show the power of God. Yeah, and they still doubted. They still rebelled. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of creates cognitive dissonance. It did in me as a believer. And so they have to deal with that. And so what they come up with is, you know what? Visions are, they deal with the five senses. You know, you see it, you hear it. And that tends to dull over time. But when you have a spiritual confirmation, that is indelible. That cannot be removed or not easily removed. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is, because there are people that are prone to visions. Hallucinations. I'm prone to hypnopompic hallucinations. I've already told on this podcast many times about being attacked by what I thought was a demon on my mission. Usually there's spiders that attack me. they don't like the visionary people because they tend to, you know, ruffle feathers or rock the boat. But if they can
or they undercut their the source of the
right, priest. like Hiram Page with his seer stone. Like Hiram Page, very early in the church, Hiram Page had a stone and he was getting revelation from it. And Joseph Smith quickly squelched that. And so they preach like they you know, if you're worthy, you can have these visions. But what they really want is people that are like more toned down and have spirit to spirit confirmation, good feelings. And those are the people that tend to rise up in the ranks.
Unless the visions confirm those suspicions, you know, they're not crazy visions.
Yeah, but how often does that happen? I mean, how many leaders did you guys have that had crazy visions that confirmed everything?
I had maybe one or two growing up.
Well, that describe their visions.
I mean, it was more or less that I heard. I wouldn't say vision. So I don't, maybe I'm getting into the softer area, where they audibly heard a voice that they thought was, you know, either an angel or Jesus or whatever that was telling them something. So it's not just that I felt the question come into my heart, but I audibly heard with my physical ears someone telling me to, you know, turn off the road, and then, you know, there was this big accident or something like that.
Well, Craig and Tom, have either of you had that kind of lesson that I had from my mission president, that visions are one thing and they fade over time? That's why Laman and Lemuel rebelled. But having spiritual confirmation, praying about it on your knees, having a good feeling, that's the true conversion.
No.
You never had anything like that, Tom?
Not me.
Do you mean, Randy, do you mean like that teaching or that experience?
No, the teaching.
Oh, the teaching, that's like, isn't that like Mormonism 101?
That's what I thought until Tom
Easy.
Said, until Tom
Come
said
on.
No.
No, I mean, that's my understanding. That's why.
I was taught that Laman and Lemuel were essentially sons of perdition because they had a perfect knowledge.
Wow. That must be growing up in Utah.
Leadership roulette, dude.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can think of as far as, like, you know, growing up, leaders or, you know, people, priesthood leaders that conveyed any kind of, like, vision or anything like that. There was, I had one, like, Sunday school teacher who, we were, like, 12 years old, and he told us that he saw Satan on his mission, and it was, like, scary as hell. I didn't really do anything for me, but... yeah, I mean the concept of, I mean there's Ensign article after Ensign article, conference talks of, you know, describing exactly what I was always told that yeah when you if you see a vision that only appeals to the physical sense, the spiritual manifestation right. is what is the strongest. I mean that's as pure as it can get from God as far as. You know, this life is concerned.
It's almost like they intuit that they don't want the crazies to feel too much license.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. This was like a maybe an unconscious way of weeding out the crazies. I think
yeah, that's
right.
probably true.
And the crazies don't make good leaders. They usually end up going off and
in the back of gospel doctrine. Yeah,
right. Or creating their own little. Little offshoot group.
Or they start realizing that polygamy is actually part of Mormon doctrine. Yeah. And they're like, hey, this is a good way to, you know, fuck everybody.
It's still in D&C right there.
Oh, yeah. My God, yeah. if a man takes 10 virgins, man, it's right there, D&C 132. But, yeah, like that's something that I really, really remember from my Mormon experience was that teaching that the conversion of the spirit is much stronger than any kind of vision you could have.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, Tom, that it's interesting that you didn't have that takeaway, because that makes me wonder if that's not something that's like overtly talked about you know, week to week, or 'cause I felt like, you know, I partly wrote that essay because I hadn't heard anybody else talk about it on any of the podcasts that I'd listened to. And I thought it was odd that no one had ever brought that up when it was like such a glaring paradox.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of an overlooked thing. But it's weird because in my experience, and as I'm listening to you guys talk, I'm thinking back to my own experience and my current stake president. He even told me the other day that one of the things he aspires to is getting something like a vision or getting some sort of, I mean, because that's something that, you know, you shoot for the stars, you aim for the moon, right, Randy?
Yeah, but that's the carrot the church puts in front of that guy.
Right, yeah, and you mentioned that.
Yeah,
I stole that right from Craig's essay.
Yeah, right. Because I even had that experience when I was 14. I went up in the mountains and I prayed and I thought, you know, if I, at that time I was working very, very hard to be completely worthy, and I deemed myself to be just as worthy as anybody like Joseph Smith was, but I didn't get the vision, so I got to have that disappointed ride home.
Well, it reminds me of a talk that was given when a member of the Corps of the 70 came to visit our mission. I believe his name was Christofferson. And he said when he was 12 years old, his family went on the church site trip, and they went to Palmyra. And he, like when the group was walking, he separated himself quickly so they wouldn't notice he was gone. And he went into the sacred grove and he prayed, you know, wanting to take Moroni's promise in Moroni chapter 10. And he prayed and he prayed and he got nothing. And that built suspense, you know, amongst us all the missionaries. I got nothing.
What's next?
What's next? Okay, how does he resolve this? And he says, and then years later, shortly before I was preparing for my mission, I remembered all of the good feelings I had when I passed the sacrament, when I prepared the sacrament, when I blessed it, when I did fast offerings. And he's like, all of these things confirmed that the church is true. So his answer was, you can ask God to answer your prayers or whether the church is true, but you cannot dictate his timetable.
Or even his dumb soft answers.
Yeah, it's like a stupid copy of The Sixth Sense. It's like, I was dead the whole time. I actually knew it the whole time. There was nothing new to learn. It's like, give me a break.
It really was kind of like disappointing because we wanted something like he got a second vision. Yeah. Or something like that. That's what we wanted, and that's what they kind of put in front of you as a carrot. But the reality is, they want the fruit really low, so you can reach it, grab it, and be content. and they want you to be content.
Yeah, and it's the same reason why they discourage the whole concept of deep doctrine. You know, even if you're playing within the bounds of revealed doctrine. It's not good to, read the scriptures or, look through the Journal of Discourses to try and uncover something that you didn't previously know, because that's, I remember reading a talk by, I was on my mission and, all you can read are Ensign and scriptures. So there was this talk by Dallin H. Oakes in the Ensign that was all about this issue of not getting too involved in deep doctrine. And I remember I cut out the editorial illustrations from the article, and I had them in my journal as a reminder to not, because that was something that I loved doing. And it was it's basically saying it's a sin to get into that stuff and to guess and kind of try and piece things together on your own. And it's like, what's, there's no, you totally take out all the intellectual curiosity that people have. It's like, that's such an important characteristic of being a human.
That's such a human instinct is curiosity, and wanting to know. And so this takes me to another part of your essay that I liked was, you asked the question, is Mormonism a mediocre religious experience? My answer is a resounding yes. Yep. It is a very low liturgy. It is a very mediocre religious experience. When you compare it to Eastern Orthodox, where they have hundreds of years of intellectuals, philosophers debating theological issues, and just, I think Scott once said, yeah, all you need is a microphone and some fold-out chairs, and you got a Mormon sacrament meeting. And somebody just throws in a loaf of Wonder Bread, and you're good.
That's scalable right there.
So I'm not trying to disparage all those intellectual, liberal Mormons.
No.
But they're creating their own version of Mormonism. And that own their own version of Mormonism might be really interesting. But it is their own version. What the church wants is kind of this monolithic religious experience that is extremely mediocre and incredibly boring. But the Mormonism that the brethren would prefer you to have is such mediocrity.
And they do it that way because that is not threatening to their organization and their power structure, right?
Exactly. It's all about authority.
Yeah.
You going to side, Tom?
No, Randy.
I think we just...
I've been chastised fully. I'm not going to sigh when Randy speaks anymore.
You still say my name like you got shit in your mouth.
Oh, come on, Dave. Come on. I've been consciously working hard at not...
Randy.
Not saying... Some people use cuss words. I use the word Randy.
I gotta go take a Randy right now.
Okay, cool.
So, I mean, what do you think about what I said, Tom? I haven't heard your response.
I don't know. I cringe a little bit just because I really think that the leaders are intentionally, confirming the fact do we need the believers to fall lock and step?
Does it have to be conscious and intentional? It could be entirely unconscious and conditioned after decades.
That to me is that's a big difference, because if they're just following a script, if they're just playing a role in, as you know, in the bigger machine kind of thing, then to me that's very different. But it just sounds like when I hear you guys talking about that, that these guys, you know, are rubbing their hands together in a closed room, like, no, we got these guys.
That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that's what they prefer. Whether that's conscious or unconscious or a combination of the both, it doesn't matter. It's still the same result.
All right. Yeah, all right.
I would say, you know, the concept of survival as, you know, whether it's an organization or an individual, there's nothing inherently evil about surviving and protecting what's yours, you know. So it really can't be helped. I mean, they're going to do that regardless of how benevolent, you know, of an organization they are or as people. It's to be expected.
Especially when your method of selection is outliving your colleagues.
Yeah.
They're just a
product of the machine, because that system was set up way before they came around.
They're a product of the machine, but that doesn't change anything. So, Craig, is there anything else about your essay you want to talk about?
One thing that I wanted to bring up was the concept of the atonement. I don't think this was a part of my essay, but this is another thing that I've never heard anybody talk about on any podcast. And have you guys noticed this? Like, the atonement is supposed to be like the central, most important theological component of Mormonism. And yep. Everything that's doctrinal or true in the Mormon worldview, it flows out of that, right?
It's supposed right. to. Everything's right. Everything's an appendage, allegedly.
Exactly. So the weird thing about that is, like, why are the details of the atonement like such a mystery? If something has to be like so central to everything that you believe in and everything like you understand about reality, it's like I feel like they they shit on everybody else when other religions talk about like the Trinity and how it's like this mystery of, you know, the three people in one, and you know, they're like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Not only that, they Christianity believes that the atonement was on the cross, but Mormons know better.
They
know the atonement happened in the Garden of Gethsemane when you bled from every pore.
Yeah, and that's like the extent of like the details, right?
Yeah, it's from James Talmage.
Well, yeah, like, so I wanted to find out, like, have you guys ever heard that that talk by Cleon Skousen? It was called like the personal search for the meaning of the atonement. Does that sound familiar?
Holy crap,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, I listened to it.
Oh, dude, this thing is like, it's like, okay, so I mentioned, you know, when I was on my mission, it was always fun to like talk about deep doctrine. And, you know, I had conversations with my companions about like black holes being celestial kingdoms and stuff like that. So,
wow.
This Cleon Skousen talk, he gives like an explanation of like why the atonement was necessary. And, you know, he obviously wasn't any authority in the church or anything, but he was invited to give this talk in like the 80s or something to some mission. So mission president asked him to come in.
I think you can still buy the audio version of this at Deseret Books.
Right. You can. So, I mean, in some sense they condone it, right? Because if it's in the Deseret bookstore, it's
for decades. It's been there for decades.
Exactly. But they can always throw it under the bus whenever anybody references it, right?
Right. Well, it's not official church doctrine. It's not official.
Well, yeah, and they also say, don't they sell Harry Potter at Deseret Book too? So, yeah.
But I mean, a book on Harry Potter and a book on the atonement, you know.
All right, fair enough.
Context
fair
matters,
enough. Yeah,
right?
You got me there. Yeah, all right.
But this thing, just, you know, really briefly, Skousen essentially says that the atonement happened and took place because Jesus' sacrifice gave him power over the elements of the earth and like the universe. So every, like, you know, the concept of intelligences, like we were intelligences before we were spirits, before we were born. So
of course
he says, right. He says that these intelligences are in all matter, you know, organic, inorganic matter. They're in everything. And like what, you know, what Jesus did was so, he stooped so low. His sacrifice was so great that the intelligences, like respond to and follow his authority.
Yeah,
it's like, it blew my mind. But of course, it's a bunch of shit. But
totally, but as a believer, it's like, oh my god, you feel like you're on the inside.
Yeah,
I remember writing a paper when I was at BYU in a writing class, and I basically, the topic of the paper was that God is not a magician. He is a master of science. He doesn't make, you know, because Joseph Smith said, you know, matter can't be created or destroyed. You right. know, it's eternal. And so I looked up tons of articles in like the Journal of Discourses and various other places that showed that God, like when Jesus walked on water, he didn't do it with magic. It wasn't a magic trick. He had perfect priesthood authority and knowledge and could command the elements to support his weight as he walked on yeah. the water. So there's nothing,
oh, for
there's,
hell's sake.
There's nothing,
wow.
there's nothing magical about that. That's scientific. And
totally
I got a 98 on that paper.
Oh, see, there you go. Confirmation of how awesome Brandon
no,
is.
No, but it's like, that stuff like blew my mind and resonated with me. But when you
yeah.
step outside of the fishbowl, you're like, oh my God.
It's so ridiculous.
Right.
And so, you know, something that's so crucial to our existence and eternal salvation, the atonement, like we know nothing about it. You know, wouldn't like a prophet, seer, revelator have the capacity to explain it in a way, you know, he's the special witness. He can explain it. You know, they're always describing it in a way that they cannot comprehend, but you know, Jesus atoned for everyone's sins.
See,
like that's just so suspect.
They could explain it, but why would they when they can leave it under the guise of mystery and personal revelation for yourself, Craig?
So you're the GA whisperer now.
I got a long way to catch up with you, Randy, but I'll try.
Yeah, well, what you're speaking of is like from the perspective of a con man. Why would I incriminate myself?
Yeah.
That's a nice pickup. Yeah. I like that.
Well, but if they really were special witnesses and prophets, seers, and revelators, like Craig is alluding to, they would explain this shit.
Not necessarily.
Why would they need Cleon Skousen? Police chief from Salt Lake City who was too right wing even for Utah.
Here we go.
Yeah, he was nuts. But yeah, like why does it have to remain a mystery? Like why is that you know,
because that's what God's will. I mean that's how he wants it. He doesn't want everything explained. I mean, he wants people to figure things out on their own.
I mean, it's...
It ruins the mystery, like, you know, the Rubik's mystery, Cube.
Which perpetuates the con.
Yeah.
Because if he just explained it all, then nobody would have fun trying to figure stuff out. You know, the big giant puzzle that is life.
I could tell you guys why your bank accounts are, you know, losing money, but that would just, you know, the mystery would be gone.
Right. Exactly.
Tom, your TBM whispers is floundering.
It's rusty.
Yeah.
It's rusty, man. Yeah. It's like I'm trying to catch up, but I
think the point Craig is making is what is more central to Mormon theology than the atonement, and yet that is still a mystery, really. Like you can't get down to the nuts and bolts of the atonement when it is the center of the faith.
And they get so off on the fact that they can explain that God has a body of, you know, what
flesh and bones.
Skin and bones. Flesh and bones,
flesh,
yeah.
Yeah, because blood.
Whereas nobody else believes that. Yeah, of course. Right.
Resurrected bodies don't have blood. A high priest, when I was on my mission, corrected me. I said, when we're resurrected, we'll have a body of flesh and blood. And he's like, he raised his hand. No, that is incorrect. You will have a body of flesh and bones. Blood is of the mortal body. It's corruptible.
Okay. Does anybody else get the? I mean, I had a discussion.
Are you having a nosebleed?
Yeah, I had a discussion with my brother where he was kind of doing a DC versus Marvel thing, and he was telling me, how the physics of the Green Lantern world worked.
Oh God!
And that's where I feel like I'm in that same conversation, just swapping out different things.
Yeah,
but
people that follow Green Lantern don't have to give up 10% of their income,
and they don't believe that that's, you know, the reality of their entire worldview.
Right.
Cool. All right.
Well, I thought that was fun. That was
I had a good time too.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for listening to my essay.
Hi, this is Brian from Novi, Michigan, and I am yet another returned missionary from Japan who has left the church. Konnichiwa, guren senpai! You can comment on this episode on the website, infinitesonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the forum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. Anyone for the closing prayer?
I'm kind of disappointed that I got the Randy slump on my
I know, right? He set you off for failure right from the get-go.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.